Crackle Fest 6 during Emerald City Comic Con weekend coming up Friday, April 8th at 8 p.m. at Hard Rock Cafe right here in Seattle. We're going to be bringing you great acts like Married with Sea Monsters, The Death Star, and of course, Kirby Crackle. This is the biggest after-hours nerd music variety show during Emerald City Comic Con, and it's back, people. Crackle Fest 6, hosted by me, Aaron of the Air Raid Podcast. Get your tickets now. It sold out pretty quick last year. So go to KirbyCracklemusic.com, get your tickets, and I'll see you there. Let's get started with the show. Well, hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 291 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Boom indeed, folks. Boom indeed. We've got a great show planned for you this week. Full of things to talk about, as we always do. Brandon Clark, also the man who goes by the name of IG88, the DJ IG88, or I think I asked him about this, whether he likes to be called DJ or producer. Producer IG88, who plays with people like Chaprice. He's shared the stage with Odessa, with Tycho, with Battles, and done a lot of really, really great stuff, man. So stay tuned for that. Very interesting conversation. Brandon and I grew up in the same area of Washington, and we've got a lot of stories to share about our exploits as teenagers running around the likes of Kingston and Indianola. So I hope you guys stick around for the full episode. Plus, we're going to be featuring music from IG88 from his new album that's out right now, Hiding in My Hands, which you can find at ig88.net. Okay? So go and get your hands on that. It's great. I mean, And this type of music is great to just put on, maybe do a workout to, go on a run, do some yard work, or just zone out, man. Just lay down like I did the other night, lay down on the couch and just was with myself for a moment, which I so sorely needed. I so sorely needed that. I just popped on the headphones, put on IG88's new album, Hiding in My Hands, and just zoned out for a little bit with my thoughts, with myself. Okay, yeah. As you can tell, I'm a little bit sick. But getting better. I'm getting over it this week. Had a case of the really bad cold that has been going around Seattle, being shared by many young hands that have been touching my face. I'm feeling much better today. Even got out yesterday, pressure washed my patio here in the backyard, and the thing probably hadn't been washed in about 30 years. And so what I did was I thought it would be super funny to write the words "fuck this" in my patio using the pressure washer. And then take a picture of it and post it to our Instagram, which you can find at yup_its_Aaron, and posted it there. And then as I proceeded to clean the rest of the patio, I think I may have pressure washed too hard where I wrote the words "fuck this," and now I successfully got rid of the F in the F word, but I now have a thing on my patio, which is now permanent, by the way, that says "uck his." Yeah, great. Good job. Great thinking, Roden. Great thinking. All right. So tons of emails have been coming in talking about what I have been talking about, what my family has been going through recently. And I really, really, really appreciate it. Really appreciate it. Michael, Joanna, Zach, all you guys from Seattle who emailed and offered to help in any way that they could. That was very, 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 very much appreciated. So thank you so much. Things have been getting real over here, man. So anyway, I wanted to talk about this because I've never been part of a program. I've never been part of a Narcotics Anonymous program. But if you've been listening to this show, Air Raid, for any amount of time, you know that I am an addict. And it's not easy for me to talk about because it's not something that I'm proud of. But when I hurt my back a couple months ago, well, about a month ago, I guess, it was really bad. And my back was really messed up. And I had to go to the doctor to get some pain medication because I could not deal. I couldn't deal with it. I was starting to get really depressed that I couldn't move and all that jazz. Yeah, that's right. I use the word jazz because I'm becoming an old person. But they gave me some pain medication, and I proceeded to basically just slip back into my addict phase. And I really went to town on the pills that the doctor gave me, which made me spiral downward into depression and just a lot of things that I didn't want to be. That stuff makes me very negative. It turns me very unwilling to do things and take care of things in my life that that need to be taken care of. Mainly my kids, my wife, the health issues that's surrounding my family. I didn't want to deal with it, right? It made me completely numb, this medication, these opioids that were given to me. And needless to say, I was not being a very good person to my family. I wasn't being a very good person to my friends. And I had the chance last night to go out with a group of friends that I hadn't seen for a little while. My closest group of friends, and we went and saw Batman versus Superman. By the way, awful, awful movie. Movie was so terrible. I fell asleep twice during that movie and woke up, had no idea what was going on. I felt like it was edited by like a 12-year-old med student at DeVry University. It just made no sense whatsoever. Anyway, back to the main part of the story. I told my friends what was going on last night. They knew about my past and prior issues with pills, and urged me to be careful with that stuff. And of course, you know, as an addict, I say, yeah, I'm fine, everything's going great, right? And then last night rolls around. And I start thinking about shit, man. I start thinking about, we did an episode with Duff McKagan a while back when he had written this book about his exploits, his addictions, things like that. And there's a passage in there, there's a part in that book where he talks about him having a back injury after being sober for a very long time and getting these pills. And then all of a sudden, boom, you're right back in it, man. And your tolerance like goes up way, way high, and pretty soon you're popping like five or six pills, just to feel that feeling, right? And that's where I was going. I was heading that way, man. I was heading in that direction, and it was a dark, dark place. And I did not want to go there. I did not want to be around my children doing that kind of stuff. I've had too many friends fall to that. Friends have died. Friends have committed suicide. Friends have just, you know, disappeared off the map because of this shit. And I did not want to become one of those people. So what I did last night is I took everything that I had and I flushed it down the toilet. And I'll tell you what, I feel great today, besides having this cold. And I'm on a better path right now. I'm on a better path. And just being able to talk to you guys about this and talk to my friends about this, I got really this is what happens with this shit, man. Like the pills, the drugs, the alcohol, it's all a cover. It's all a cover for whatever else is going on in your life, right? And as I said, we've got some serious health shit going on. And I'm sitting on my back porch last night after flushing all this stuff down the toilet, and I'm texting my group of friends and saying, and you know, coming clean, basically, about what has been going on. And I lose it. I absolutely lose it. I hadn't lost it yet. I hadn't really lost it yet about what was going on, about the morality. Not the morality. What's the word I'm looking for? What's the word I'm looking for? About the possible losing of a loved one. Okay, for lack of a better term, right now my mind is escaping me, and I'm thinking about this stuff clearly for the first time, and it hits me like a bag of bricks. Like, oh my God, what is happening? What is going on? What am I gonna do? What am I gonna do? And I just lost it. I just start crying on the back porch. I know that these most recent episodes have been pretty serious, and you can fast forward through all this stuff. I don't care. That's great for you, but this is definitely a mode for me to get this stuff out there, and not out there necessarily, but just talk about it with myself and work through it by myself. I think it's helping me. It's helping me. And it definitely helped me having this group of friends, this close, tight-knit group of friends. And you know exactly who I'm talking about, people, if you're listening to this. So thank you. Thank you so much for being there for me, for supporting me, for supporting my family in the time that we need you guys. And thanks to all the listeners who have been kind enough to email me at aaron@air-raid.net and showing us some support. And I really, really, really appreciate that. So with that said, let's get into this, shall we? Let's get into our chat with Brandon Clark. The man, the myth, the legend, the producer, IG-88. By the way, do you know what IG-88 is? He is a bounty hunter in Star Wars. Doesn't have one line in the Star Wars movies, in the original Star Wars movies, but he's there with Bosk. He's there with Boba Fett. He's a android or a robot bounty hunter. And it's awesome. And I think that's how me and Brandon Clark actually first bonded. So we may be talking about that a little bit as well. Also, we're going to be hitting on this funny story about how Brandon used to skip school to go to a different school and take classes at a different school. I found that very, very fascinating. So I think you're really going to enjoy this chat with Brandon Clark, IG-88. And gets a little weird, folks. I love conversations like this. So let's do this. Let's go with our first musical break. This is off of the new album by IG-88, Hiding in My Hands. And it's the title track, Hiding in My Hands by IG-88. We'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears when we return. Stay with us. So what do you do? What do you do for like an Uber driver that almost kills you?
I hadn't necessarily planned out how I wanted to die or how I saw myself dying.
Yeah.
I didn't notice until I was in that very moment that that was it, and it was nice. I kind of let it wash through me. It was Saint Xian's. Aquarium of the Animals was playing the same like Beauty and the Beast, intro song.
So he had a soundtrack going.
He was listening to classical music, and okay. He was a gentleman of Asian descent. Couldn't have been in the States that long, uh-huh. But he had a Crocodile Dundee hat, which I thought was a nice juxtaposition and flair. We tried to have some conversation, but between both of us mumbling, it kind of got lost when we just had this mutual appreciation from one another. I don't think he knew that he was trying to kill me.
Yeah.
Perhaps he was too relaxed, but we're just going through Ruined Boots in the most dangerous way possible, and in yellow lights, just slowing down just enough to where it would be like optimal T-boning
speed.
So
do you think he thought like the yellow light was like, hey, slow down?
I think he just didn't want to accept like the racial stereotypes that light was trying to project. And he was like, yeah, I'm fine.
That could be it.
Yeah, I don't know. I sunk deeper into the seat. It wasn't even a new car. It wasn't even a relaxing seat.
Do you have your seatbelt on?
I don't know. I don't know. It would have just happened subconsciously.
Like,
but
basically like watching your life flash before your eyes.
Yeah, yeah, but slowly. Not much flashing happening, which is good because I wouldn't really want to kind of see a time capsule of what I've put myself through.
Indeed.
But no, it was really nice. I didn't know where the studio was or anything, and we're coasting at dangerously slow speeds and relaxing classical music happening. I'm glad I didn't die before getting here, but I feel like the world would have still rotated regardless. But yeah,
well, probably I just probably would have just been sitting on my couch like wondering where you were.
Mm-hmm.
But you made it.
Yeah,
you're fine, and you gave the guy 5 stars though.
Yeah.
Why do you give a driver like that 5 stars?
Because of how comfortable I was with dying at that moment. It's not about if I get from point A to point B. That's not...
Okay.
That doesn't deserve merit, you know?
Right.
Whether I feel safe or not is kind of inconsequential. I want it to be an existential experience, and he provided that.
I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Brandon Clark.
Yeah.
Joining me here in the backyard.
Heck yeah.
Also known as IG-88. What would you call yourself? Like, a DJ?
No, I don't know how to DJ.
Okay.
But there
what is the proper, what is the proper word for what you do?
There isn't one necessarily as far
engineer,
as
like the, producer,
as far as the stage performance aspect, that's when it kind of gets muddied and, there's no real word for that yet other than like button pusher, but, producer. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Make beats, and then I come from a performance background, so I was able to use MIDI controllers to dice apart things that I had already created and find a fun way to perform.
Right.
Because I feel like if you're paying the same amount of money that you would pay for a ticket to see a band, then someone shouldn't just push play. You should be seeing some kind of performance through, whether it's mistakes or you visually being able to see that something's actually happening, whether you understand it or not. I feel like the performance aspect needs to happen.
Okay. So what do you do? I've never seen a solo IG-88 show. Do you have a lot of stuff going on then? For performance?
Yeah, not like pyrotechnics or anything.
Other
than my burning gonorrhea, which is hard to encase within my trousers. But I have a... 4 different MIDI controllers, so I kind of recreate things.
You have a very dry sense of humor that I think people will have trouble picking up on. You were joking, of course.
Sure, yeah. I mean, just roasting cocktail weenies by the burnt bridges from coming across like I'm an asshole or something. But no, I mean well. That's the tragedy of it all. So I have these 4 MIDI controllers, which I'm also using to produce outside of like pulling in, you know, playing guitar and piano and stuff. And then
Oh, so you actually pull in like live instrumentation?
Yeah, I started playing guitar. I play drums and stuff.
Okay, too. And you do that on stage?
It depends. It depends on my intoxication, how much I've actually allowed myself to prepare.
Yeah.
And how much I care, and what the actual venue is. You know.
Okay.
Like if I'm playing with a bunch of like people doing DJ sets, I don't need to come and like play guitar and loop and do experimental shit.
Right.
So it just depends. But my standard way of playing is sometimes it's live sequencing things. So I'll have like these drum pads that are all my different samples, and then I'm resequencing them live and a beatbox, and then run that through like grain delays and shit and loop it, and then, you know, sing in auto tune to make like stretched out pad textures. And then Miss Frizzle said to get messy and make mistakes, so I drink heavily and then do all of the above.
Right on, man.
Yeah,
I'm gonna have to come and check one of these out.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, dude.
I'll put you in my pocket.
There you go. I'm into that. So you do have this new album that just came out that dropped on your birthday,
mm-hmm.
right? Waving Goodbye. No, wait.
Hiding in My Hands.
Yeah. Why am I looking at... Oh, that's the song that was about to play.
Yep. Because you're just bumping it.
Oh, man. Okay. I got it. And when did this actually come out?
What on the date? On February 27th.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's actually why I was so comfortable with dying in the Uber ride. I put a lot of work into this.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's a huge weight off my chest to be like, oh, I could die right now. And then at least there's this, you know, accurate representation of how I felt right. at that time.
You've put this thing out into the world.
Yeah. It's on Spotify for like a couple of years until it gets renewed. You know?
Yeah, there you go.
I don't know what happens post-mortem with your credit, but just make sure they keep mine going.
Yeah.
I'm putting that in your hands.
I'll keep it alive for you, man.
Thank you, sir.
Let's see. You and I met because you also play with Chaprice, who has been on this show a long time ago. So you are the producer that plays with her live, and
I produce
records for her and everything like that, right?
Yeah, for at least the past few years, all the production has been done by me, which is fun for taking it live, because I've created it so I already know how I want to recreate things live, and I could jam with Phil Peterson, who's playing cello.
Phil's been on the show as well.
Yeah. So I run them like through my interface live, and kind of I can manipulate effects for both of them or loop certain things. And it's just a fun trifecta for that communication translates on stage. And
yeah.
Yeah.
How'd you get hooked up with Chaprice and Phil?
Through Ian Imhoff, who is our manager.
Yeah.
I met him in I gotta do this dad burp really quick. Oh man, you're gonna want to change that pop filter. It's gonna smell like apricot beer. Which I guess is better than what my breath was initially. So I met Ian in Bellingham through Idiot Pilot.
Okay.
Which they're dear friends of mine. And he was a tour manager for them for a little while.
Right.
Small community. And then when I moved down to Seattle, he just hit me up out of the blue and said he had heard what Chaprice was after and the kind of production that she wanted, and that's what I was just making in my room for the internet.
Yeah.
So it was really cool. And then when we met, we really clicked like comedically and everything too. So it's nice with Phil and Chaprice, we just kind of write. We don't ever have to talk. Like everyone kind of does something and might not be what you expect, but it's inspiring, and then the song kind of moves in that direction.
Yeah, So how does her move down to LA affect everything that you guys are doing now?
I mean, the internet is a million times cooler than being in front of people in real life. So
you guys are still going to keep it up?
Yeah. Right? We're going to South by Southwest, so we're doing that next week, and then got like a LA show coming up, I think a couple of them, so
yeah
it's not really slowing down. I mean, most of the record was already written a while ago, and then we got it mixed, and then it's finished. So if it was writing an album while someone was in LA and I was in Seattle, it'd be more difficult. But still doable.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's fine if artists are if they work well on their own. Like, even people that I vibe well with in the same room and we can create things, sometimes I'll give them like a beat or something and then they'll go in a corner and write. Like, that solitude is kind of necessary for certain people. So,
yeah, yeah. Are you that type of person?
It depends. I can feed off of energy of people of jamming, like whether it's being recorded or not. I really like doing that.
Yeah.
But also the pressure of, especially I like making music with other producer friends, because you want to like one up them a little bit, but in like in a productive way.
Yeah.
It's like channeling.
But it's not like you guys are in the same room together. Some, like in a situation like that, right? With your producer friends?
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes it'll be on their computer, which is another challenge too, because like you don't have the tools that you have, so it's fun. I like just having certain things thrown at me and then having to create something out of it. The possibilities are so endless with computers and instruments and tools.
Well, that
kind
of blows my mind. So like you actually get together with people that are doing kind of the same thing and actually like jam on the computer?
Yeah. I mean, with Ableton, you can sync and be in the same tempo, and then you don't even... I can be on my computer, you can be on yours, and as I'm creating something, it pops up on yours, and you don't even have to talk. You could jam like you'd be in a band, but you're producing. But that's one aspect of it.
What? Really?
Yeah.
I don't know why I didn't think that could exist.
Yeah, it's been...
But that kind of blows my mind.
It's been around for a while. You just need a slave and a master, so you can use your interface or whatever, and then one's a master and one's a slave, and then we're in the same Ableton session, which is really fun for performing live.
Oh, wow.
But another cool way to do it is not even like the jamming aspect, the actual production side. If you could sit down and then here's their samples, here's their instruments, here's their MIDI controller that mostly has like cashed out joints inside of it, like it's seen better days. And then I don't know, I like just having certain things and trying to make the best thing I can out of that, as opposed to the infinite possibilities of I could buy this gear or I have all these VST plugins and stuff like that. Uh-huh. It's nice to kind of limit things. So
I
feel like I write better that way.
Well, that's cool, man. I dig that. So let's go back a little bit. You and I are basically from the same area too, right? Aren't you a Kitsap guy?
Yeah, I didn't know you were, or we had had this conversation.
I think we had this conversation a long time ago.
Star Wars conversations probably eclipsed that as far as how I prioritize memories. Yeah.
Right.
But I'm from Kingston.
Kingston. Yeah, I'm from Indianola.
Oh, right. Oh my God. That's the one gem in Kitsap County.
You think so?
Oh, Indianola's a bubble sounds too derogatory. A good bubble. It's like
it's a good bubble.
It's unscathed by the methy incompetence of the rest of the county.
Yeah, I don't know. There's Indianola, every place has its like problem people.
I think I used methy as an adjective and not necessarily literally meth. I meant visually the aesthetic of it is unscathed by how trashy the rest of that county is with me. Like I have memories all around that. Good memories and bad memories, but Indianola gives me a fuzzy nostalgia, whereas the rest is kind of a blur of so many emotions that I can't. I'm an emotional sponge, so I can't really process all that at once in a positive way.
Yeah,
but Indianola has always been like a nice escape.
It definitely does have that kind of like clean feeling. Like even the kind of like the dirtier parts of Indianola, like the more downtrodden parts of Indianola.
Yeah,
like. It does. It definitely has that feeling, like it's just like a almost pristine place.
I played some of the first shows I played were at the clubhouse there.
Really?
Yeah.
No shit. When was that?
Probably like 2002 or something.
Really?
Like maybe earlier. Yeah.
Huh. No kidding.
Like just grungy.
Who's putting on the shows?
I don't know. I know. Chad was always around. Chad Channing.
Yeah,
he was always
the ex, the first drummer for Nirvana.
Yeah,
yeah.
And he was always around. And then like Cat from Dog Mountain. A lot of those dudes. You know Cat from Dog Mountain?
No.
Like East of the Equator. These are some deep cuts. You should know this Indianola.
Well, see, I left Indianola in 1999.
Yeah.
To go to college. So some of the stuff, when I was living in Indianola, there were no shows there. Nobody did any shows.
They just put cones, like a couple of cones that they weren't government official cones.
No,
They just found them at the end of the street, and then you could walk around. Block, and booze.
Yeah, they block the street off. Yeah,
it's amazing.
Great.
Yeah, and then that gave us an ability to play in front of our friends and everything, but not in like a sterile pay to play kind of way. It was like everyone genuinely wanted to be there.
Yeah,
and
I'm sure there's definitely a vibe in Indianola where it's like. When I was growing up, there was a guy named Terry that lived there. That was just like one of the town drunks, And then there's another guy named Tom.
Cut off jean shorts, Tom?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Tom, Vietnam vet Tom.
Oh, straight up.
And they would just walk around and just be trashed all day,
It's weird that they would want to be around a lot of trees, because you'd look out for Charlie's in them, but maybe, okay, keep going, sorry.
Yeah, but putting the cones out in the street and blocking off a whole street just for a night does not bother people in Indianola because it's like, yeah, whatever. People are carrying beers around. Terry's carrying beers around and throwing up in the parking lot.
Yeah.
Every day. So, it's nothing different.
Aren't we all just thrown up in the parking lot of life every
We're
day?
We're all a little bit of Terry. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Even when I should have been in trouble in Indianola, I wasn't causing any mischief necessarily. I think I was like lying at the end of the dock, probably on mushrooms or something like that, and staring at the stars. And then the security guy came and he very politely was like, "Hey, stars are pretty." And I didn't even know he's a security guy. He's commenting on the stars. I'm like, "Yeah, man, the stars are pretty." He's like, "So why are you guys here?" And I'm like, "Why is anyone here?" and then finally I saw something that slightly resembled a badge of some sort.
Right, right. You're like, time to
vacate.
Time to go.
Yeah. So, yeah, fled off into the woods. Actually, in my, just a lot of good memories, like the beginning of my crippling energy drink addiction kind of, was at its peak then, because I think Rockstar came out in like 2001 or 2002 or something like that.
Yeah.
And I remember I borrowed my best friend's little sister's bike that had a flat front tire, and this sounds like an old man, like uphill in the snow both ways story, but I rode in this with this shitty bike down, like when it snows there, it's really, really bad. I was riding in the snow to go to the clubhouse to buy a Rockstar because I needed it. And then I didn't have a pocket or a backpack because I don't ever think ahead.
Yeah.
And so I stuffed it into my pants.
Wait, so you rode that from Kingston?
No, from Indianola. He lived probably like a mile up the hill. But I took his sister's bike and rode it and then didn't have a place to put the energy drink that was cold and it's snowing. So I stuffed it in my pants. So I think it really stunted the growth of my penis, actually. That was probably a prime year for my penile growth and stuffing cold energy drinks in the snow. Probably.
I always heard that smoking pot out of pop cans would stunt the growth of penile enlargement. And I think that's what happened to me.
Same. Yeah. I did both. I probably stuffed that in my pants, drank it, and then poked holes in it and then smoked pot out of it.
But, man, I'm thinking of, because I went to Kingston Junior High.
Same.
And man, I did some dumb shit at that school.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really dumb shit. Like, do you remember all these like I'm a bit older than you, but when I was there, there would always be these weird little rumors about how you could get high without marijuana.
Yeah,
they were like the stinging nettles.
Yeah.
Like, or you smoke stinging nettles.
This was somewhat recently, but bed bugs. People were saying that you could, like, bong rip bed bugs and shit. I'll send you a link to that. It's pretty great. It looks real. Like, the articles look real, but it's like, yeah, you could smoke dead bed bugs and get high.
That sounds like a terrible idea.
It's worth a try. Whatever makes the pain go away, honestly.
Banana peels?
Or the dishwashing or the hand soap. I guess you could filter that out and drink it to get drunk.
Hand sanitizer.
Yeah,
I have heard that. Yeah, it has alcohol in it.
Mm-hmm.
I heard kids were doing that.
Or just whippets and stuff.
Whippets, smoking tea.
Huh.
Me and some friends used to try smoking tea, and that did nothing.
And look at you now.
Yeah. Look at me. Look where I landed. Doing a fake radio show.
You got a good penis though. You didn't stunt the growth of that.
So it sounds like you had a pretty eventful childhood over on the Kitsap Peninsula.
Yeah, it feels like we had a cartoonishly similar childhood.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think most people that grow up over there on that side of the water have a very similar upbringing.
Yeah,
you know, where in Kingston did you grow up?
Like just downtown.
Yeah.
I mean, not on the ferry boat, but yeah, like right next to the skate park. There was a trail that just went straight from my house to the skate park. So walked to school. There's also the trail kind of back through Spectrum.
Uh-huh.
Was Spectrum around when you were?
Oh yeah. Yeah, totally.
That's what got me into recording. Was Spectrum.
Right. So Spectrum was a school for people who don't know and who are listening from outside of Washington. Spectrum was the alternative school to Kingston Junior High, right? Mm-hmm. Wasn't a middle is a middle school age, right?
High school, actually, but you wouldn't be able to tell because of the lack of ambition that just was an overcast there.
Yeah.
So it sucked too because there were it wasn't the latest technology by any means, but there were classes there that you couldn't take anywhere else. Like, I feel like alternative schools often for the right
reasons. Had a bad rap.
Yeah.
Like when I was growing up there, we had always thought of that school as like, oh, that's where the dumb kids go.
Yeah.
But it turns out it's like where the like uber artistic kids went.
So it was hit or miss though. Just like,
really?
I mean, even taking school out of the picture, if you're an artistic person, there is such a huge chance that you won't even be able to cope with society in so many ways. You might be really good at like melting down, like garbage and making Dan Marino sculptures. Like, okay. That's amazing. No one else can do that. But also you don't pay your bills on time. Like, once you get enough of people like that, like on a good day, there's the Dan Marino sculptors.
Right.
The rest, they're just kind of kids. They're just kids. They're smoking pot. And the teachers there couldn't necessarily pull the reins back on everybody. It was scattered. There's woods everywhere. You know, there's transitioning in between classes and stuff like that. But there were so many resources that could have been tapped into. So before I was even in high school, I would walk through there to go home. And I had friends that went there. And there was the recording studio. They had, like, Pro Tools set up and, like, some sense and the teacher kind of took me under his wing before I was even necessarily a student because I was really excited about it.
Uh-huh.
That was refreshing, I think, too, because a lot of people just kind of dicked off. They took like the music classes away to be like, oh, this is an easy A or an easy whatever the equivalent would be for an alternative school where you butt chug scope under the mushroom tree. Right. But he helped me really realize that was a thing that could even be done.
Right.
I was getting really into trip hop and Boards of Canada at the time, and I didn't know how these sounds were being created. I still didn't then, but I knew like, oh, it's happening here. It's being recorded on this computer and being made with these synths. So by the time I was in high school, I had my senior year, actually half of my...
So wait, horrible. did you go to Spectrum and to
North Kitsap?
To North Kitsap High School?
Okay. Actually, my mom didn't want me to go to Spectrum because it's a riffraff like reputation.
Right.
It,
right.
It was hard to convince her, but I started doing recordings there before I was even a student, and I showed them to her and she's like, "Oh my god, you made this? Like, here, I don't care, go."
You know,
it was a very impulsive like
So you switched?
Yeah. Well, I
senior year,
senior year, I was going half time.
Okay.
And then unofficially for the whole 3 years of high school, I was just there and kind of recording. And stuff.
Oh, I see. Okay. So they were just letting you come in and like use the facility,
but not like a free reign kind of thing. Like Phil was the teacher, and he knew me and I had friends that were in that class. So, you know, I could come in, I'd say hi and I'd talk to him, you know, I wouldn't just go use the studio or whatever. Yeah.
Were you skipping class at the actual high school to like go over there?
It's a gray area, mostly because of being stoned, but
you were skipping class. This is the funny part is that you were skipping class to go to a different school's class.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm incapable of thinking ahead or even processing what's happening at that moment. It's all just, you know, an impulse. But
sure.
Yeah, in retrospect, I suppose that's what was happening. But also, the junior high got out sooner than that high school did. So on my way back, I would stop by, and then there'd be the same people, like, just kind of there doing whatever. Yeah. And then the studio spaces would be open. So I would just go in there and just start recording, or like start kind of dicking around in Pro Tools. And then he'd come in because, you know, nobody else wants to learn anything. And then he would teach me. And then we kind of developed a relationship. And from there, that's when I was like, oh, this is what I want to do. And college is a great way to get your family to not ask the details of what you're doing with your life. When you're at Thanksgiving, or oh, what are you doing? I'm in college. Like, yeah, I'm pissing away tons of money to learn an outdated program that I could just learn all these tools on the internet. I can't tell them that. I have to be like, I'm going to college. So I use that as an umbrella to have them not bother me while I just kind of wrote what I wanted to write.
Wait, so you skipped it. So wait,
after high school, you
went to where did you go to college?
I just went to Shoreline.
Okay.
Cause that was like the quickest jump. And then after a year or so of that, I was like, I'll just learn it all on the internet or just on my own, which is kind of what ended up happening. It probably stunted how quickly I learned things, but the way that I learned them, because I was teaching myself, was different.
Yeah.
And coming from a garage band kind of, like literally a garage band, not the program, but like background, I was able to incorporate things of just being a gear whore. I became a gear whore with no money, which is
just crippling. Wanting to like buy all this stuff to make different sounds.
Yeah. Whether it's practical or not.
Sure.
So I was,
I've been there.
Yeah. I was like running, I'd get like old Disney records, and then I would just get really high and like needle drop at a random place and then run it through the Chaos Pad and sample that in a weird way and then pull it into Pro Tools. And I had a really roundabout way of doing things, and it's completely inaccessible garbage music, but it was experimentation.
Right. Sure. Yeah. You're figuring things out, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So did you like play instruments as a kid?
Not in any way that playing an instrument would be respectable, you know?
Okay.
Like I wasn't...
You're just fucking around.
Yeah, I wasn't in band or anything, but sure. I got into guitar and bass and drums at an early age because the friend group that I had, we were all kind of picking instruments and then just did it, and then eventually we were playing and we all had the same musical influences, which was grunge and Radiohead and stuff like that. So we just started jamming together, but that gave me an opportunity to rotate between different instruments because that was all set up. So, I really like drums a lot. I think that was one of my favorite instruments. So
God, it's one of the hardest ones to learn too, man. Like for some reason I used to play drums in a 2-piece band and I had like 2 beats. Like I could play 2 beats.
Yeah.
And that's it. Yeah, pretty much, you know. Nope, couldn't even do that.
Whoa, too
couldn't
intricate?
Couldn't do it. No. Not even close. I had the problem where like my right leg kind of had to be doing the same thing as my right arm.
It's because you were thinking about it.
Probably. I don't know. I think it was like I started at too late of an age.
No.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, it was like after college. I started playing drums.
I don't know if that's a thing. I think you can learn at any time, right?
Maybe.
I don't know. That's coming from a kid who studied his penis growth with pop cans. Like, I don't know.
Right.
But I'm pretty sure. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know, man. So how old were you when you were messing around with all the instruments?
My dad gave me his classical guitar when I was probably 11 or 12, something like that. And then I just kind of dicked around on that for a little while and tried lessons. But
Did your dad teach you anything? Was he kind of a musical guy?
No, not necessarily. And we weren't really talking that much at that time either. So I kind of like acquired that, and then I was like, I'm gonna go learn this somewhere. I don't know, whatever angsty teens do. I had like swoopy hair and skateboard and stuff. Like, oh man. Yeah, I don't know. So I just kind of self-taught from there, which stunted the growth quite a bit. And then when I tried to do lessons, I couldn't because I didn't really have the attention span for it.
Yeah, yeah, I had that same problem.
So I think that turns a lot of people off from instruments is going the regular route of lessons. But bypassing that, I have the most fun just finding something and kind of making sounds with it and the recording and stuff. So I feel like being able to produce helps me kind of just do whatever the hell I want to do at that time.
Yeah.
If I feel like stretching out, kicking a trash can to make different kick drums for a little while is a good idea, then I'll just do it.
Yeah. Do you do a lot of that? Like make your own sounds? Like sample?
Yeah,
from just like made or what's the word I'm looking
field for? Field recordings?
Yeah, recordings, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, most of my drums on the Chaprice album that isn't out yet, and a lot of it on the solo one that I just did has had a daughter. She's 1.5 now, but I got a lot of her hiccups and like strange sounds that babies make, and I would sample that, and a lot of my percussive sounds are made out of that. And being at the bus stop, I'll just record kicking around leaves and then turn them into like thick claps and stuff like that.
So, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
That's kind of how I get quote unquote organic sounds.
Sure.
My shit is layering sound design on a synthesis basis with field recordings and kind
of. Dude, you're taking it to a whole different level, man.
Whole different level of inaccessibility and in internet headphone music for a couple of kids that have emotions. Yeah, totally.
There's just a couple out there. All right, we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears when we return with our chat with Brandon Clark of IG88. Stay with us.
Too good looking?
Way too cool. Those were like my junior high years were my cool years. That's when I had like, you know, a lot of great a lot of cool friends, you know. I wouldn't say they were great, but but I was part of the cool crowd, you know. I was voted like funniest kid, you know, for the yearbook.
I think I got one of those too, but I think that was just the politically correct way of saying most likely to not succeed.
Right, exactly.
Like, wait a second.
Exactly. I got in a lot of trouble. That's where like Kingston Junior High is where drugs found me, you know? And that was where things began their little spiral. You know?
Yeah.
And a lot of kids, God, man, I remember being in junior high and, Coke started making its way into junior high, which was crazy to me. Like to think back on that, it's like fucking 13-year-olds, dude, were doing cocaine.
Yeah, yeah. At school.
At school, yeah. They were skipping lunch and doing cocaine. Like, what the fuck?
I mean, we all skip lunch when we do cocaine, but they were well, skipping sure. the actual yeah. lunch break.
Yeah.
It's weird. Yeah, yeah it's so concentrated in that whole town, but especially once you get the actual schools. I don't know if that stems from the trickle-down effect of parents that still live there or
I think it's partly that. I mean, that whole town, especially when I was growing up there, was very, very depressed. It seems like it's doing better now.
Well, we're not there.
Well, yeah, we're far removed from it. But it feels like just like kind of the downtown corridor is doing much better, like financially. Mm-hmm. You know, it seems like that town's doing a bit better.
When I was going to junior high was when the skate park was being built,
right?
Which was great because I skated a lot. But uh-huh. also, it concentrated what was already a concentration of drugs into one area and then put it next to the woods. And right. then you also get like a riff-raff recreational activity. And you know, now you have ne'er-do-wells doing, you know, shitty drug deals outside the Kingston Lumber all day.
Oh, my God. I remember this one time a group of us were going to smoke pot before a dance. I think it was a dance.
Isn't that wait, yeah? In the idea,
but you
of
couldn't. But back in junior high, like you couldn't leave school and then come back to the dance. Like there was some weird thing like that because too many kids were going home grabbing, you know, little bottles of liquor and drugs and then coming back to the dance and, you know, doing that.
Yeah.
So it was like, it was, you were supposed to stay. You weren't going to get on the bus. You were just going to go straight to the dance after school or whatever. I think that's how it went.
But you could get high and then go to the dance.
Right. Well, that was the plan. And Joel Kikuchi had the weed and had the pipe. And
incriminating.
And I think I told somebody about it that I shouldn't have, and they ratted me out.
Yeah, because that's
and
a thing.
So the whole group got called into the office, and I remember getting like taken out of class and, you know, sent to the office, and then I see all the other people that I was supposed to be meeting up with.
And then that's where that foundation of stoned paranoia starts to bubble
up. And then, you know, they sat us all away from each other and stuff. And we all knew that Joel had the stuff, right? And he had the pipe, and we all had our... They told us to bring
that's
our
backpacks.
That's
probably verbatim what you told some stranger, which got
oh,
you there in the first
place. Oh, my God,
place.
Man. And I was freaking out. And I didn't know what to do. And then, you know, I just... You know, they called me into the principal's office, and they're like, "So we heard that something was being planned for before the dance," and I was like, "I don't know."
Snitches get stitches, yeah.
And everybody just totally denied it, and they couldn't prove anything, and they went through our shit, and then we got sent out, and so we're all waiting for Joel. Poor Joel to come back out, and he finally comes out unscathed. And this kid had the wherewithal
to
like
it?
Fucking
stick it up his butt,
reach down and get this stuff out of his backpack or out of his pocket,
yeah.
And throw it into a trash can before as he's walking into the principal's
office.
See,
and that's the problem with the internet and having access to Netflix. You need cops. All you need is cops and infomercials and then reruns of Seinfeld. That's all you need. These kids are never going to learn that common sense. Yeah, on your way to the principal's office, toss it. You see it a million times.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
Nobody got caught. Nobody got, you know, they never found the pipe. They never found the, you know, anything. And nobody got in trouble.
Nice.
Yeah. But well, somebody snitched. Somebody snitched on me, man.
Well, you snitched on yourself.
Pretty much. Yeah. I shouldn't have been talking about it. It's been part of my problem throughout my life.
Your conversation probably said, Coochie has the stuff, which is, Sounds like a throwaway 80s drug cop movie.
That was definitely, it was definitely my fault. Yeah, yeah, that's for sure. So you said you just had a kid?
Not just, yeah.
Well, a year.
Yeah, yeah, year and a half.
That's
yeah.
still pretty new.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Little daughter?
Yeah.
That's pretty rad, dude.
Yeah, she's great.
Was that a planned thing?
No. No. Nope.
Yeah.
No, yeah, I mean, It's the manifestation of me validating my own insecurities through carnal desires.
Okay.
And eventually you hit a brick wall where reality sits in. I think it was good for me, though, because I learn and adapt well when things are happening instead of planning for certain things to happen.
Okay.
I feel like I'm good at rolling with the punches.
I think I'm fairly similar to that.
Yeah,
yeah, it's, definitely.
It's relaxing in a way, but if you...
Relaxing?
Well, I mean, to be incapable of planning so that you're...
Oh, I thought you were referring to having a child.
No.
Relaxing. No, child.
No,
yeah, yeah,
far okay. from it. Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, like, living in the moment can
sure.
be good, but there's
sure.
there's repercussions such as the...
Yeah, yeah. That. I live in both worlds, though. Like, I plan, I like to have things planned out, like, you know, vacations or, you know, you know, we're going to dinner or something like that. I like everything to kind of run on a schedule almost, which
yeah.
is, you know, much to my wife's chagrin. But, like, when we were having our first kid, we knew... that it was coming, and I was just I kind of just let it go, you know, because like what can you plan for a child? You know, you can have some clothes ready and some diapers ready, but that's about fucking it.
Yeah,
right.
What to expect when you're expecting uncertainty?
Yeah, well, yeah, like everybody wants you to like read a book and well read like several books. On how to raise your
like,
child and how to make a baby.
I went to
Einstein.
Kingston Junior High. I'm not reading any book
yeah,
ever.
Exactly.
Especially about the only
it's
thing
like,
that school taught
I don't
me,
know
which was
how
making
to read.
Babies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah. yeah, I mean, I'll give her a class on, you know, OxyContin when she comes of age. But
what is the age for that?
Well, for me, it was about 13. So, yeah.
You are 12, going on 13, I'll give you oxy. That was just a
you
random.
You finished it. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Don't worry. I've got another.
I've got a two-sided. Where's this going?
I've got a two-sided VHS of the Sound of Music OxyContin version. I'm
oh,
not
okay.
about to do it for you right now, though.
But yeah, I mean, I took the approach of like, you know what? What did they do in the 1500s? Did they read a book on how to raise or how to, you know, have a baby? Like, come on, you just do it, right?
Yeah. That's
your mind and body are forced into it.
Yeah.
So is that how you felt a little bit?
I don't know.
Are you even more lackadaisical than that?
Yeah. I'm. I don't know. Aloof. Possibly that might
yeah.
that might have too much of a positive connotation with it. I don't know. I don't know. She's great now, and it's amazing, and we have a lot of fun. And now that I'm experiencing it, it's exactly what makes me happy.
Yeah.
But it's really hard to juggle. But you know, that's no different than before, because I never was really good at life or administrative things. But
yeah.
but now like I have these chemicals of fatherhood. That kind of get me out of bed and stuff. So
sure, yeah, totally,
yeah.
totally. But it definitely gives you a reason,
yeah,
to like you know, or drive almost to like, you know, have a small human that you have to take care of.
Now I play video games. Like I'm playing The Division, and like the city's overrun, and there's kids. And I'm like, wow, what are you guys doing with the kids? Like, they're shooting everyone. I'm like, who's taking care of the kids? Now I have that shitty perspective, and it sucks. Before, I could just kill things and get high and fap, but now I can't. Everything's a kid, and then I'm an emotional sponge, so I feel that. Feel the pain of everyone.
Yeah, man, there you go. A little Dinosaur Jr. That's totally true, right? That changes big time.
Yeah.
Like, I can't watch movies about, like, kids dying.
Yeah.
Anymore.
Yeah.
It just kills me. I can't do it.
That used to be the only way I could maintain an erection was movies about kids dying, and now it's just 180 flip.
Totally changed.
Yeah.
For the worse.
The magic of fatherhood, huh?
Are you still together with the mother?
No.
No?
No.
Has that been, that's got to be kind of tough.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. I mean, and a lot of it was because I'm pursuing,
Music.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And not being good at planning things necessarily. And, you know,
did you want to keep it together?
Yes,
relationship?
Yes and no. I mean, I have poor judgment constantly. Okay. So what I wanted to do is kind of inconsequential, because there's a healthy thing that an outside observer could spectate. And then there's, you know, what's tangible and what would be good. And, I don't know. My parents divorced when I was pretty young. And
how old were you?
Like 9 or something like that. But uh-huh. But that was enough time for me to see how unhappy they were, and then, you know, observe things. Actually, Sarah McLachlan, I didn't figure this out until like 2 years ago. They had the same breakup album. I didn't piece it together. I was like, why do I know all these Sarah McLachlan songs by heart? Why is Sarah McLachlan in New
Your
Age?
Parents were listening to this.
Go
the same album.
Hang out with my dad in the arms of an angel. I'm like, all right. And then hang out with my mom. Like, oh, your love is better than ice cream. Like, all right, this is the same album. I know there's a lot of compact discs out there. You guys could be listening to all kinds of stuff, but you guys are both listening to it. I didn't think about it until somewhat recently.
Uh huh.
That was their divorce album. That was, they must have both liked it or something. And then also had that like healing thing. So the byproduct of that is now I make new age music for millennials.
Yeah. Right.
Or something.
Right.
I don't know, but I love pads. I love Enya.
So that really kind of inspired you to become who you are today.
Not even inspired.
Your parents' divorce album.
Yeah, seriously. That's what I should call my next album. the soundtrack to your parents' divorce.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, no, I didn't. It wasn't like, ooh, like I heard it and I was like, oh, this is great. I wonder how this, like, it just accidentally happened.
Yeah,
like I was into like rock and grunge and rap and stuff. And then smooth like pads, like long reverb pads, and then listening back, I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's Enya, that's Sarah McLachlan, that's like, I'm pretty sure I was conceived at Lilith Fair. I don't know.
Are you serious?
No, I'm probably not. Okay. I don't think the timelines line up, but that'd be pretty rad.
Yeah, you know, be something that'd be a key talking point.
Yeah,
in the life of Brandon Clark. So you saw what your parents were unhappy.
Yeah,
and that informed your decision that, you know, maybe you and the mother of your child would not.
Yeah. Whether you're staying.
Would not want to like keep that or try to keep that together.
Whether you're staying together for admirable reasons, mm-hmm. your kid will still get to an age where they can sense that.
Oh yeah. And for sure.
Inherently, we're going to be shitty parents accidentally or on purpose or whatever. It's going to happen to a certain degree.
You mean together?
Individually. Okay. You know, I'm going to do things that my daughter is just like, I can't believe my dad would say things like this, or would fart and then pretend that he stepped on a loose floorboard or something. we're all going to be doing stuff like that. But I think it becomes, it's less human and more unhealthy when it's a couple pretending like those things don't exist.
Right.
For the sake of you. Because then we're kind of placing that guilt onto you.
And did you feel that when you were a kid?
No, my parents were so different, and I feel like we were all unhealthy in our own ways. There wasn't necessarily any kind of like, I recognize what's happening right now, and like there's this tension, and we all recognize it, but we're gonna push it. It was too scattered, and no.
So do you have like a good relationship with the mother?
Mm-hmm.
Every child.
Yeah, I mean, you have to. You don't have a choice. For the same reason that when, you know, nuclear fallout happens, you figure out how to use a gun so you can shoot people for Twinkies. Same thing happens on a smaller scale with the partner. If you're like, all right, this isn't about us, this is about her. So
Sure. Well, that's good, man.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that.
So, yeah, now I just make sad dad beats.
That should be the name of your next album.
I think that's just the genre in general. So, if anyone out there is into that,
have you started bringing her along to like shows and stuff like that, or is she still too young for that?
She really likes music. Yeah. Actually, recorded. she was just over one when she recorded her first song, because mm-hmm. she found had an SM58, just dynamic microphone, on the ground.
Nice.
And she picked it up and started singing, but she hadn't seen me do it, and I didn't show her what it was for. But she started like making sounds into it. So I plugged it in to Ableton, and I just chopped up the like a Nina Simone sample, like the beginning of a song, and let it loop. And then I ran the mic through reverb and let her just sing. And she didn't just make sounds. She made, there was a cadence to it, and certain, she hit like one note the whole time. It was like she was saying something and like writing a song. So I recorded it, and it's really cool.
That's awesome, man. I have my daughters like come back here and actually like record with me sometimes. And we'll plug in pedals, you know, to the guitars and stuff. My daughter Tatum, my 5-year-old, loves to come back here and just like pluck on a delay pedal.
Yeah.
And just fuck with a delay pedal for like an hour.
Squires out here?
Yeah, man. She's got her own little electric guitar. Her hands can't fit around the neck yet, but you know, she gets to play around as much as she wants back here. It's pretty rad.
I feel like adding effects to guitar or any instrument turns into something that is less conventional, and without that also strips away the theory or what a piano line's supposed to sound like, or what a guitar mm-hmm. line's supposed to sound like.
Yeah.
If you run it through a delay preset that you made, going into reverb, going into distortion, there's no wrong way to play it. You're just making sounds that are real to you.
Sure.
So not to narcissistically pull it back to me, but I feel like that encompasses everything that I do with production, is knowing the technical skills to combine things that may be unconventional because it feels right at the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I dig that, man. I dig that.
Which I guess is how I ended up with a daughter.
But yeah, it happens. Mm-hmm. Well, that's great, man.
Yeah.
I like the fact that you're bringing your daughter, and you let your daughter like mess around with the sounds and stuff like that too.
Yeah.
Like I think that's so important.
Just
so important.
Having it available, not pressured by any means, but like, yeah, there's different things. And I don't know, she can get into whatever, and I'll just seeing her have a passion, or anyone that I love in general, have a passion towards something, whether I understand it or not, I'm definitely going to support that.
Yeah.
Yeah. She could be really into, skinning frogs alive and making Degrassi murals on the wall, and I'm gonna be there saying, "You did a great job, dear. You did a wonderful job. That looks just like a young Drake in a wheelchair."
Yeah, there you go. Well, Brandon Clark, it has been an absolute pleasure chatting with you, sir. I'm glad we could finally put this together.
Yeah, yeah.
Been talking about this for a little while. So,
yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Hope you had a good time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Might be some. Geographically deep cuts for some people, but at least it's authentic. Thanks for having me.
Definitely. Thanks a lot. Dude. The sense of humor on that guy. I love it. Go to IG88. That's right. It's just I, it's just G, it's just 8and8.net. Go get your hands on this new album, Hiding in My Hands, and just zone out to it for a couple hours, man. Maybe smoke some legal marijuana and just zone out. It's definitely perfect for that. Although I'm not saying that I get high or anything, right? We're working on that part, folks. We're working on that part. Hey, thank you so much for listening this week, everybody. It's been a pleasure talking with you, and you're really helping me get through some shit, let me tell you, man. Really, really appreciate that. Appreciate all the emails. You can send them to aaron@air-raid.net. Hopefully next week we'll have some more time to get some of those, and more time to get to some of this new iTunes reviews and stuff like that. So, okay. Also, hey, coming up, one thing we forgot to talk about last episode with David Dickinson, founder and owner of Suicide Squeeze Records, which was an amazing episode, by the way. And thank you so much for all the fan mail on that. Holy shit, did we get a lot of letters on that one, talking about Elliot Smith and how they met and all, and Modest Mouse and all that stuff. They've got a bunch of stuff coming up, man. The Coat Hangers, which is an amazing band. They are releasing their album, Nosebleed Weekend, on April 15th on Suicide Squeeze. And Audacity, another amazing band, is releasing Hyper Vessels on April 1st, 2016. And that's not a joke. It's not a joke. It's not an April Fool's joke, people. Audacity, Hyper Vessels, releasing on April 1st. So make sure you check those out as well. And come and see us at Crackle Fest, man. Cracklefest, okay? The night of April 8th, Friday, at the Hard Rock Cafe in Seattle, 8 p.m. This is a 21-plus show. We always have a great time there, man. It's going to be Married with Sea Monsters from Waco, Texas, Death Star, and, of course, Kirby Crackle, and me, your favorite Air Raid podcast host, because there's only one Air Raid and there's only one Aaron. And we are just going to have a great time, okay? So get your tickets. Go to Kirby Crackle, Kirby Crackle, KirbyCrackleMusic.com and get your tickets, okay? There you go. All right. You can subscribe to Air Raid on iTunes, and if you do, please take a moment to rate the show. We're also available on the Stitcher, TuneIn, Cairo Radio, and Spreaker apps for your mobile devices. Or just visit www.air-raid.net to subscribe directly to our RSS feed on any of your podcatchers. Keep in touch by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/theairraidpodcast. Follow us on Twitter at @airraidnet. And remember to take the pledge, folks. Take the pledge to tell somebody about the show. Tell them how much you like it, all right? Spread the word. We're going to go out today with IG88's remix of Odessa's Say My Name. Have a great week, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next time. and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast, featuring our chat with Brandon Clark, also known as IG88. Whoa, I just like spaced. Totally spaced on that. We'll be right back. Hold on.
Can we stretch that out? Your pause? Yeah, can I put music? Can the musical break be you spacing out?
You want to use that on one of your tracks?
Like, you're like, and then we'll play the song for the podcast, and then we'll come back and be like, whoa, where was I?